Welcome to iPharmRx, where we explore the evidence that informs ambulatory care pharmacy practice. My name is Stuart Haynes, editor-in-chief of iPharmRx, and we all know that bad things happen all too often when patients transfer their care from one setting to another. Important information about the patient's history are not communicated, the results of laboratory tests are not checked or acted on, medications are inadvertently stopped or somehow don't get restarted. Over the past decade, there's been considerable effort to improve these transitions, and many health systems have hired entire teams to facilitate the smooth transition from the hospital back home. These programs often focus on improving communication and follow-up with primary care physicians, but could enhance communication and coordination with the patient's community pharmacist, reduce readmissions. Well, the Geisinger Health System in Pennsylvania implemented an inpatient pharmacist to community pharmacist handoff program and recently reported their findings in the Journal of the American Pharmacists Association. And here to tell us all about the study are Dr. Jessica Wooster and Dr. Larissa Bethishu. Dr. Wooster is on faculty at the University of Texas at Tyler and practices at UT Health East Texas. And Dr. Bethishu is on faculty at Chapman University and practices at the Hoag Memorial Hospital in Newport Beach, California. Our guest today wrote a commentary for iPharmRx entitled, The Power of Pharmacist-to-Pharmacist Handoffs During Transitions of Care. Jessica, Larissa, it's great to have you both on the iPharmRx podcast today. Welcome.
Hello, everyone. I just wanted to thank you for having us on the podcast today, Stuart.
Thank you so much for having us. We're very excited to be here.
So before we get started, I want you to imagine you were getting ready to discharge LF, a 66-year-old female who was admitted to the hospital with a lower respiratory tract infection, which precipitated a COPD exacerbation and required the patient to be intubated for respiratory support. Fortunately, the patient's hospital course has been relatively uneventful, and she was extubated 2 days ago. As a member of the hospital's transition of care team, you are responsible for preparing the patient and her family for discharge. The patient has a long-standing history of COPD and high blood pressure. Fortunately, she quit smoking 6 years ago. This is the first time the patient has been hospitalized with a COPD exacerbation. The patient states that she uses a combination product, the tiotropium and olodanterol inhaler, once daily, as well as albuterol inhaler as needed for her COPD symptoms. For hypertension, she takes irbesartan and chlorthalidone every morning. The patient was last seen by her primary care physician 2 months ago, and she states that she has a follow-up appointment already scheduled for next week. So before we get into the specifics of the study you reviewed for iPharmRx, can you give us a sense of some of the things that are going through your mind in this case? What additional information would you want to collect and assess? And what are the key issues that need to be addressed to ensure a smooth transition back home in a case like LF's?
So this is a great case. And as a transitions of care pharmacist facilitating discharge from the inpatient setting, reflects what I very frequently do see with my patients. So there's a few things that are running through my mind here. First and foremost, obtaining a comprehensive medication history. So including any medications that maybe the patient didn't think to tell us about, over-the-counter medications, herbal medications, not just what medications she's taking, but any information about adherence barriers. Things like adverse events, maybe concerns about her inhaler, incorrect technique. This will all be helpful in getting her home on the right medication regimen, ensuring that as she goes home, we're optimizing not just her active medication problems, but taking a look at her chronic management too, and really ensuring that we're providing continuity of care for the patient, which leads us to educating our patient on her new medication regimen. And so that would include engaging our patient in setting treatment goals and helping her understand how to use her different inhalers, especially given her recent COPD exacerbation, understanding when she would use her long-term controller medication compared to her albuterol as a rescue medication. Additionally, we want to ensure appropriate follow-ups, making sure that we are addressing that chronic disease state management component of both her COPD and her blood pressure, And since her COPD exacerbation was precipitated by an infection, this would be a great opportunity to address immunizations, educating her on her required annual vaccinations, reinforcing smoking cessation, and also identify and address any access barriers. So if our patient is going home on new medications, if we foresee a need for prior authorization, this would be something that we could initiate while the patient is still in the hospital, as opposed to waiting for her to go home and not be able to pick up her medication from the community pharmacy.
So, Jessica, let's talk about the study entitled Reductions in 30-Day Readmission, Mortality, and Cost with Inpatient to Community Pharmacist Follow-Up, which was published in the May-June 2009 issue of the Journal of the American Pharmacists Association. Can you give us a brief summary of the study methods and its major findings?
Yes, so the primary study objective was to determine the impact of pharmacist-provided continuous care and electronic communication on readmissions among high-risk patients. These high-risk patients had to have an admission diagnosis of COPD, pneumonia, heart failure, acute myocardial infarction, or diabetes. Patients assigned to the intervention group were those who indicated they would be using a participating community pharmacy to pick up their discharge medications. The intervention group received consultative services from inpatient pharmacists before they were discharged. The inpatient pharmacists were also able to communicate patient information that they thought was important to the community pharmacist via a secure messaging system. The community pharmacists were able to review that information from the inpatient pharmacist prior to talking to that patient post-discharge, and then they performed patient consultations via phone 3 to 7 days post-discharge and up to 3 additional times that were usually at about a monthly interval. So the control group were the patients considered to obtain usual care, and the usual care group would still receive that inpatient pharmacist consultation, but they did not receive any follow-up with the pharmacist in the community setting post-discharge or via telephone call. The study results of the patients in the intervention group that received one or more pharmacist visit post-discharge had lower 30-day readmission rates and lower 30-day all-cause mortality, which were both statistically significant. These interventions resulted in a reduction in total overall healthcare costs. It had an estimated return on investment of $8.14 for every dollar that was expended.
Now let's talk about some of the strengths and limitations of this study. The authors call this a pragmatic prospective study. What is a pragmatic study design, and why is it less rigorous than other study designs?
So clinical trials can be described as explanatory or pragmatic. While an explanatory trial aims to evaluate the efficacy of an intervention in a well-defined and controlled setting, a pragmatic trial is designed to test the effectiveness of the intervention in a routine clinical practice. So this type of design represents a real-world practice setting. Thus, it may determine if it's actually feasible to incorporate into existing workflow and/or the needs to incorporate a new service or intervention such as this. So some of the strengths and weaknesses of the study did not assess the pharmacist's training, competency, and attitudes towards this new intervention, so it may have differed between the groups and influenced some study outcomes. Additionally, information was collected on the patient's admission diagnoses, but they didn't really assess the patient's overall clinical status, which, as we know, this can definitely influence patient outcomes, 30-day readmissions, etc. So the total cost of care estimate showed evidence of reduced overall costs, but this was just for one insurer and was a subset analysis that occurred. So we really can't generate these results to the general patient population and those that have varied insurance coverage, Medicare, or those who are underinsured. Pharmacist to pharmacist communication that was facilitated via this electronic secure messaging system does appear to be an effective method to improve patient handoffs. That being said, this secure messaging system likely may not be incorporated across all health settings amongst different healthcare inpatient institutions, as well as the multitude of outpatient pharmacies. Another strength of this study is that they incorporated the transitions of care interventions into the normal workflow for those inpatient pharmacies, This was part of their normal job responsibilities. Thus, they didn't have to hire new pharmacists or add a bunch of workload on these pharmacists. So it was very feasible for them to do. The new intervention for these inpatient clinical pharmacists was that secure messaging system. They had never communicated specifically with community pharmacists before about their patients before discharge. The communication with the inpatient to the community pharmacist handoff was encouraged, but also not required. So this may have impacted the quality and also the volume of these messages that were sent. Another plus of this is the study really mirrors real-world practice, and it demonstrates that pharmacist interventions do improve clinical outcomes and can impact the cost of total care with follow-up, minimal additional training, and limited reimbursement for services.
So, Larissa, let's return to our case. Based on the results of this study, communicating with LF's community pharmacist might be beneficial, but many community pharmacists have to deal with high volumes of patients, so they don't have a lot of time to interact with the patients they serve, and usually don't have access to the patient's medical records. How would you go about communicating with LF's community pharmacists? What kind of information would be most important to communicate?
So that's absolutely correct. It's really important to have communication between care providers, but the challenge is how to best do this. By having the inpatient pharmacist communicate key pieces of information to the community pharmacist, rather than having the community pharmacist have to seek out clarifications about the prescription or initiate prior authorizations, we're being proactive. And so key pieces of information that will be valuable to communicate once the patient is discharging include changes to their health status, any active problems that require intervention, any pieces of follow-up or education that require reinforcement, and that the pharmacist, the community pharmacist, is aware if something needs to be discontinued, modified. So really the end goal, if this is done well, is that it should streamline patient care and improve the workflow of both inpatient and community pharmacists rather than creating more work for them. And so in this study, we saw that they had a communication system, an electronic communication system between the two pharmacists. Obviously, not every system will have that in place. And so the next challenge is, how do we improve communication? What methods can we use? One potential tool I wanted to share with our listeners is that Jessica and I are part of the APHA Transitions of Care Special Interest Group. And over the last year, we've been working on creating a communication template that can be used for exactly this purpose. And it's something that can be faxed from inpatient to community pharmacists and vice versa. But the intent is exactly this, to serve as a streamlined way of communicating key information about your patient. If you don't have a system in place that allows you to communicate using your electronic health record.
Well, Jessica, Larissa, I want to thank you both for joining me today to talk about the care of patients transitioning from one care setting to another and how community pharmacists can be more involved. I think it's clear from your comments that you believe that community pharmacists are an untapped resource that can improve the care of patients as they transition from hospital to home, including community pharmacists in the chain of transition can not only improve the quality of care, but reduce healthcare costs. Well, tell us what you think. Should patients be directed to a preferred community pharmacy or pharmacists who have business agreements or collaborative practice agreements to perform transition of care services? How might inpatient and community pharmacists communicate more effectively? Remember, only iPharmRx members can leave comments and use the interactive features on the site. You can become a member of iPharmRx. It's free, so sign up today. And by the way, if you are a board-certified ambulatory care pharmacy specialist and want to get recertification credit for this program, check out the board prep and recertification program offered by the American Pharmacists Association. We've partnered with APHA to make select content on iPharmRx available for board recertification credit, and it's in small, easily digested chunks. So check it out today. Until next time, this is Stuart Haynes, Editor-in-Chief of iPharmRx, signing off.